Talking about the Indians. Our good friends, the Chippewas. How's that hit you?
I don't know, man.
I don't really know.
I don't know where you're going with
that. I don't know either.
You just made me think of Cleveland.
The thing is, you test the mics Indians. Using. If you test the mics using the same words all the time, then you develop a tolerance to those words. So I try to use new words.
Tolerance.
Words.
Huh?
Words.
Sure, Chippewa is an old word, Kevin. I hate to bust your bubble.
Now I'm gonna have to start over.
I think this is so confusing.
I know
that we should play theme music.
Well, I mean, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Do you want to do that? Are you finished talking about the Chippewas?
Ryan always wants to get to the theme music about 6 seconds into our conversation.
No, I think I got.
Set the record.
I think I did. I think maybe it was 6 seconds.
The punk rock intro, like
yeah.
What do you
do? Yeah. All right. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark.
Somebody liked it.
So, you know, regular segment we have on the show, Celebrity Death Watch. Usually not quite as tragic.
It's usually pretty tragic.
Death is tragic.
Well, I mean, when Abe Vigoda passes, that's not necessarily tragic. That guy lived a full life.
Wait, is Abe Vigoda dead?
I believe he is still dead, along with...
Is this situation like Murder, She Wrote, where like the same lady keeps showing up and then people die and then
that
they
was
investigate
my thing
it,
about
they
that
never
show
ask
is
her,
like if Angela Lansbury shows up in your town, get the fuck out.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But anyway, Kevin Garcia, bass player from Granddaddy, had a massive stroke and died yesterday?
I think yesterday.
So anyway, he was 41 and... that is tragic.
They were just about what? They just put out a record.
They just put out
a month ago.
Yeah. Just reformed, and they sound great. But that might be the reinstitution of the curse that we talked about them, and then somebody died. So
I don't know.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But anyway, rest in peace, Kevin Garcia. You were in a great band, and you will be missed. Shane has some thoughts on...
I do have some thoughts. So, equally tragic.
I don't know.
Well,
if equally.
I mean,
I don't know that anybody died. They just had bad sandwiches.
This is the segment of Schadenfreude here.
So last weekend was supposed to be the weekend of the Fire Festival, which
FYRE,
and I don't know at what point anybody is going to be listening to this show, but just a brief rundown. A couple douchebags decided they were going to throw a music festival for, I mean, tickets up to $250,000 from
VIP
packages.
Like a really weird eclectic bill, right?
Yeah,
like
it was
Blink-182,
Migos, Major Lazer. those are the three that I can think of off the top of my head.
Aren't Migos a dish?
Migos.
Oh, that's right.
Migos is a very, very popular rap group at the moment.
Yeah.
But it ended up being like kind of the equivalent of that cruise liner that... like ran out of power in the middle of the ocean.
Right, and there's like feces floating up and down the hallways and stuff.
It was like the you know, festival equivalent.
Well, so somebody, there's a few things to unpack that you guys need to know about, but somebody said something that just basically is festival 101, especially festival on an island that nobody lives on.
Like kind of inaccessible
in the Bahamas.
Other than by like a chartered plane.
Well, and also like ferries. But so nobody lives on this island. Anyway, somebody said, I read this quote, and they're like, or whatever, I'm paraphrasing. It's sort of Festival 101 that you probably need to figure out if the place where you're throwing the festival has running water or not. Because in this case, it did not. There was no running water.
That seems to be important.
Right. Wow. And so, okay, so I just found this out. Okay, they had this first round of raising money about this festival and everything. Then they, like, for example, they started selling tickets before they even had the lineup put together or before they had figured out any logistics. And they were spending money on, like, celebrity people. Like,
and how much were the tickets? They were, like, fucking stupid
expensive.
They
went from $1,000 to, like, $250,000 for VIP packages. But so they were giving, like, $250,000 to $90,000 to a bunch of these, like, models to, like, advertise it on their, like, feed on Facebook and stuff like that. But one of the things...
And one of the Kardashians, I think, was...
Yeah, there were all kinds of, like, these trendsetters, you know, exclamation points. But, I mean, quotation marks. But here's... This is what I really think is... This is where the schadenfreude comes in. So the dude, I think his name was Billy McDonald, and Ja Rule, they found out about this island or something... This dreamed up this idea in October and didn't even start working on the festival that they began to sell tickets in November before they even had a lineup and didn't really start working on logistics until March, and the festival was happening in April. And October, like this huge festival that people are spending, you know, you're hoping to make millions and millions of dollars on, and you start working on it less than six months before you're expecting to throw this big thing.
Well, to be fair, I think Woodstock had a lot of shit going on that went wrong, and it's like legendary now.
Well, a different kind of legendary, and that's because too many people showed up and crashed the gates, and it rained a lot. This
also, Woodstock actually happened.
And yeah,
that's true.
Woodstock happened.
No, this was all people like... Okay, we're going to do everything we can to get people off the island.
Yeah, it looks like they were going to this island on like jaunts, like vacation jaunts, like every other weekend. Supposedly they're supposed to be scouting it out and stuff, but really they're going to other islands around this island and like have it trying to hook up with locals and stuff like that. I mean, just incredibly well run, well thought out festival.
The best tweet I saw, and it said, this is just another example of how people with more money than sense will go to some place with no real escape plan. like go to an exotic location with no real escape plan.
Well, like, and they were promised like gourmet food and stuff, and it turned out to be like ham sandwiches.
I don't even think there was meat.
No, there
I think
was no
it was
meat
just,
on it. It was
I think
cheese.
It was just cheese, lettuce, tomato, and bread.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that worked for you.
Yeah, but not if I'm spending part of what I'm promised.
Several thousand dollars.
Oh, and here's another thing. They were encouraged to not bring cash and use these like those digital like wristbands like they do in all like all-inclusive like resorts. So everybody put all their money into these wristbands that they couldn't use because the equipment wasn't there to be able to use it or buy anything with it. So once they got like a flight back to the airport or anything, nobody could buy food or water or hotel rooms or anything because so many of them didn't have money,
any cash, or yeah, other means of payment.
They were expecting just to fly, get chartered.
It's
going to
be an all-inclusive like music festival, and
nope,
it was an epic failure.
Yeah, you can make the argument that it was an all-exclusive music festival.
That's probably more accurate,
including the music.
I read this article where this woman was hired to go and like do some coordinating and stuff like that. She got down there. She's like, oh, fuck. And at one point she's talking to some guy, and the guy goes, she's just trying to bring up logistics. She's just trying to basically say, like, we can't do this. Like, this, it is nowhere near ready to be done. And he goes, fuck that. Let's just go be legends.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, legendary. Not the way he was expecting.
As somebody who's put together events, not at that scale or whatever, but like one of the things that struck me as really interesting is that they said after they scrapped it, they said, oh yeah, we're going to come back and do one next year. Yeah,
we'll do it next year.
And I thought, all right, well, one of two things will happen. Either they won't do it next year, which could totally be the case, or they're operating under the idea that any press is good press. And I was like, there's a lot of this that's just not good press.
Well, they're trying to give people, like, you know, there's a $100 million class action lawsuit being filed that's been filed against them.
Already?
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
And then, but they're trying to give people, if you don't ask for a refund, they're trying to refund you in tickets to next year's event.
Yeah.
Fool me once.
Right, right.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how many people get fooled twice.
Man, those are people with more money than sense.
Well, I think that's already been proven.
And it's been proven that Americans have short, short memories too. So,
yeah.
Okay.
The Who, for one, will not be fooled again.
Thank you for that.
Thanks for okay.
Speaking of dated records,
that's a completely different generation. Really,
talking about completely different generation. Okay, whatever.
So sad.
Yeah. Okay, this week, Van Morrison, Astral Weeks. So, okay, so here's what I have to say about Van Morrison. I absolutely love the record that came after this, Moondance. I think it's a classic. I think it's one of the better albums from that era. I think he's an incredible singer. Having said that...
He's got a great voice. Holy shit,
what the fuck was this pile of shit, man? No, you know what? I shouldn't put it that way.
Okay, so some might say it's a derogatory term, but snooze fest? Because literally, I got tired listening to it.
I don't mean it's a
pile of
shit.
And to be fair, Ryan, you get tired a lot. So
that's a fair argument. That's absolutely true.
Depending on what time of the day, like, it doesn't mean much. You're just going to put on Law and Order SVU on the TV with the sound all the way down, and like,
no, I watch Law and Order. Like, they'll do a marathon, and I'll watch like seven of them in a row.
Oh my god,
SVUs, yeah, totally. Yeah. But man,
yeah. So here's all right. So I. Like I said, I love Moondance. But the thing about Moondance is it has songs on it. And it has musicians that know what songs they're playing. Because this...
Well, he just hired a bunch of dudes who didn't really know each other, didn't know the music
yet. Right. They didn't know the music. He went... apparently, they got to the studio. He went in his own... Like, he went off to a little isolation booth by himself. And then just started playing the songs. And then they would, like, follow him. But the thing is, okay, a couple things. Do we really need flute on every single song?
God damn, So I will say this. I went through a brief
dalliance.
Jethro Tull phase in high school. Like, I listened to, like, two
were you, like,
records.
Sitting on a park bench and
yes,
you're just like, hey.
Yeah, leering at girls with bad intent.
Right,
yes.
Yeah.
But no, I went through a little phase where I kind of liked Jethro Tull, but those songs were upbeat and, you know, and like, I can kind of take them or leave them now, but.
Yeah. I mean, I like to listen to the flute and like some Brazilian music and stuff like that, but this is
just really languid.
It's just hippie. Okay. You know, one of the things that this album has going against it ultimately, is it's just a bunch of like. Notes that he's singing and playing in like kind of no discernible song order. I mean, they just kind of all runs together. And then the musicians, rather than like playing like parts, they just play over the whole song. They're just it's like being at like a campfire with a bunch of different guys,
like in a drum circle or something, where everybody's just trying to contribute their whole thing.
Yeah, that's a good drum circle's a good idea. Where everybody's just trying to. That's what this was. At some point, it's just like sonic overload. Just like, I don't need to hear the flute playing every single note on the entire song.
You know what's not surprising to me is that my friends who really love the Grateful Dead also love Van Morrison.
Well, that doesn't surprise me for a lot of different reasons. But if you go listen to his stuff out, this is the only album of his, as far as I know, that is like this. That's hippie, as far as like.
Well, and this is like
jammy.
Kind of legendary now.
Right. So you know what's interesting? Well, there's a lot that's interesting. And after we listen to the first song, we'll talk about the story of the lead up to getting this album made. But it is a legendary record, and I've heard of it spoken. It's highly of for many years, and the only time I'd ever really kind of listened to it was years ago. I was on the road with Derek Morris, and he's driving the van, and whoever drives gets to listen, you know, that kind of thing. And then like I wake up and I was like, "What? This sounds like Van Morrison, but what is it?" And then
but
I just
shitty.
And put me back to sleep. And,
exactly.
And yeah, that it was this. I don't know, you know. And here's a problem. There's one song, "The Sweet Thing."
I've got two songs on this record that I can deal with. That's one, and there's another one that I genuinely like. Beyond that,
what's the one that you genuinely like? Do you
Ballerina.
Remember? Oh yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, those are pretty good. I think the first song, Astral Weeks, gets better halfway through, but the rest of it, I don't really know how to deal with it.
Do you want to spin Sweet Thing? Because I do have a weird anecdote.
Yes, yeah,
about
let's
that.
Go ahead and let's listen to that.
All right. And I will walk and talk in gardens all wet with rain. Oh, oh. Sweet thing, sweet thing.
and you shall take me strongly in your arms again.
So I'd just like to point out that Mark started playing that song, and what just happened once he started playing the song?
Everybody left the room.
Everybody left the room.
Well, I didn't leave it for the reason that you guys left it. Like,
well, no,
I left like it because I know what song that is, and I've heard it already. I've heard it recently.
Yeah, you might have to go to the bathroom. I had to go get some M&Ms.
Yeah, we all had stuff we had to do.
Yeah, but it was not of dire importance that we needed to pee in here to listen to that song.
It's a pretty good song, though.
It's pretty good. That's exactly the level I give it at.
Well, look,
C plus, man. For like,
no, B
minus.
No, it's at least a B. But you know what? But compared to everything else on this album, like, this is the toe tapper, dude.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't know. I mean, why does everybody has to play all at the same time always? It's like fucking like.
It's just a bunch of dudes jamming. Like,
yes. All over each other. Yeah.
I am not that into the spontaneous jamming, and apparently it wasn't that well received when it first came out, but now
it wasn't very well promoted.
They didn't promote it at all.
Yeah.
So here's a weird thing. I work at a restaurant. There's a HEB grocery store that's about halfway between my job and my home, and so I stopped there like pretty much every night after I get off work, and I had the window rolled down and this song was playing. And I was just going in to get my nightly shopping done, and this guy was, like, stacking carts, and he goes, "Hey, what was that you were playing in your car?" And I was like, "Oh, it was Van Morrison." He's like, "Oh, that was really good."
and then that's where that conversation ended?
Well, I mean, I had to go in and get some shopping done. He was stacking carts.
I really want that story to end with that guy, like, having a faraway glaze in his eyes. Like,
he kind of did.
Yeah, of course he did.
I followed Van in the... In a van.
I don't know if he knew who Van Morrison was, but he clearly is the target market for that song.
One of these days, I'm going to be rid of these carts.
So the acclaim for this song is interesting. It was listed as number 415 on the all-time 885 greatest songs.
Right stuck in the middle.
Well,
what a bizarre number of greatest songs, too, by the way. 885.
Like, yeah, I just love the bizarre lists that are out there. That is just good time fun right there.
Did they set out as saying we're going to limit it to 885? Or did they get to that far limited. And they're like, yeah, there's no more great songs?
Yeah, I got nothing left.
So I want to talk about the story behind this album getting made, because it's way more interesting than this actual album is. So in the late, he was in the band Them that we're all familiar with, like, you know, Baby Please Don't Go and
I mean, I knew he was a band called Them, but
I know that Baby Please Don't Go down to New Orleans song, and there's like Gloria,
I definitely know.
And then
that's how they closed Liberty Lunch. They did like a
Gloria
24-hour like Gloria Jamathon.
And Here Comes the Night was the other hit that they had, which for some reason I know that song and I can sing it to you, but whenever I think of it, it becomes a combination of Here Comes My Girl and Because of the Night by Patti Smith.
Yeah, I thought maybe you were just like misremembering it.
No, it's Here Comes the Night. Okay. If you heard it, you would know it. But anyway, so after that, so he left that band and he hooked up with this cat, Burt Burns, and they did a record. He did Brown Eyed Girl.
Who died, and then it was all kinds of legal shit.
Right. Well, so they did Brown Eyed Girl. Brown Eyed Girl was a huge hit. And then after that, Burt wanted him to do, he produced that record, and it was also his label. He wanted to do something more like that, and Van Morrison wanted to do totally
this
different.
Shit.
Well, this wasn't written yet, but he wanted to do different, like,
I would
more
argue
artsy
that
shit.
Maybe it wasn't even written.
I think that's a fair statement. But anyway, this guy, Burt Burns, was found dead from a fatal heart attack, and right before he was found dead, he and Van Morrison had been fighting a lot over which direction the music was going to go. So his wife, Burt Burns' wife, like, helped.
Let me just interject one thing. He was diagnosed with an undiagnosed
congenital heart
defect.
So she blamed it all on Van Morrison. And it turns out, after this happens, she found out that her husband hadn't filed the appropriate paperwork to keep him in New York. He's from Northern Ireland. So she went ahead and called, like, immigration on him.
Just like try to get him booted out.
Yeah,
of the
tried to get him. So she did. So they evaded tried. They evaded INS, and went to I think Vegas or somewhere. I don't know, but he just went ahead and just got a shotgun marriage to his then girlfriend at the time, and was able to stay in the States. And so what he did, he was still like trying to tread lightly. So he went ahead and went like in Massachusetts and just was playing like folk gigs and tiny little folk clothes with this guy, like while they figured out how
and
to
they
make
were playing
this record.
They ended up playing full sets of what ended up becoming this record.
Yeah.
But I also really appreciated the fact that like, and Wikipedia makes no explanation, like they don't explain this at all, but his then girlfriend, eventual wife, they always refer to as Janet parentheses Planet
Janet Planet
Janet Planet
Janet Planet Rigsby Minto, and I was like, I don't even know how all this works. I'm confused. But yeah,
I think she yeah she I think she was like came up with Wavy Gravy.
Mm. Yeah, I read this. Of course. I read this story recently, and it was what's his fucking name, Eddie. The owner of Red Gills. No,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And he ran.
Thread Gills is a kind of a local Austin legend.
A legendary Austin venue that is no longer open.
Well, no, it's open as a restaurant.
They still have music.
Oh, well, you said Thread Gills.
It used to be. Eddie Wilson is his name.
Yeah, like
Armadillo. Right. Yeah, yeah, so he used to run the Armadillo World Headquarters, which was like a pretty big. It used to be an old, like I think, airport hangar or something, like for private. There were a couple
like where like Willie Nelson would play and
yeah,
and
so yeah, and this is like late 70s, early 80s, and so apparently, they were like all of these people like staying out behind the Armadillo and like in these like round buildings, they called yurts. And Van Morrison, I don't know if he played there or was about to play there or was just there because it was the place for people to go. But he's there with this woman, and he said he was wearing a cape. And he was there with this woman, and, like, he wouldn't talk to anybody. He would only whisper in her ears, and then she would have to, like, say what he said.
They would have to talk to him in the third person. Yeah. The book that is that's getting ready to come out, they just teased it in The Statesman.
Yeah, I read about it in the Chronicle. But yeah. My favorite part of the whole story, they go outside and they're looking at the yurt, like these round buildings, and he whispers in her ear, and she looked and tells the guy, Eddie Wilson, she's like, Van needs his corners. Like, cause
was he that big a douchebag rock star?
He's just a fucking weirdo, man. He's got a bad reputation in the industry. Lars used to be friends with a guy that was like
your former Gordonson. Producer.
Yes, yeah. Lars Gordonson. Yes. He used to be friends with this guy that worked with that would be on tour with him all the time. And every night after the show, they would draw straws to see who was going to have to be the one to go out with Van because he always wanted to go out to have beers afterward. And I was like, they didn't want to go out then? He's like, yeah. The guy said that would just be hours of him, like, nursing or drinking Guinnesses and, like, sitting there with his head in his hands going, it's all so fucking bleak. Like, night after night after night after night. So, dude sounds like...
That's kind of really Northern Irish.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, nothing against Mark's wife, who is also Northern Irish.
None taken.
He sounds like an odd...
This is my favorite
eccentric dude.
This is my favorite excerpt of that excerpt of the excerpt that ran in the Statesman. And the funny thing is like this book is co-written by Jesse Sublett, who's a guy who did our show at South By last year and has written a lot about Austin in the 60s and the 70s. And so anyway, he says this is Eddie telling the story about when. He put Van Morrison up at his house. He says, we were pleased as punch that Van Morrison chose the Armadillo to kick off his Caledonia Soul Express tour in January of 1974. Van was big box office at the time, and to cover the premium price we paid to get him, and this will date it, we raised the cover to $3 for his show, and all three nights sold out. He was supernaturally gifted and more than a little eccentric, but we did our best to keep him comfortable and happy. His wife... even put him up at the house, and during his stay there, a young, attractive female companion did all his talking for him. And so, the introduction, he's like, a typical interaction went something like this. Van would like an omelet, said the interpreter. Okay, I'll be glad to make Van an omelet, I said. Whisper, whisper, whisper. Van would like me to make his omelet, said the interpreter. Sure thing, no problem. It was a weird 3 days at nights.
Dude, that is insufferable, man. And I've heard similar stories about Prince. Like, you weren't allowed to, like, look him in the eye.
Yeah. Like he's a Doberman.
Like, Jesus, dude. Like,
just, you know. I mean, come on.
Look, there's lots of weird behaviors, but that... having fucking like an interpreter that he just would whisper in her ear and then genuinely the weirdest of all.
Yeah, well, when you first brought it up, I was thinking like, what is like a Cyrano de Bergerac kind of thing? Like, but no, he just is a fucking
weirdo,
crazy weird dude,
a nutball,
asshole. Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, I will say, like, in defense, in kind of an oblique defense of this record, I think one of the things that I found to be really interesting is that many reviewers who wrote about this record in really interesting and beautiful ways, like ways that were kind of, you know, that kind of didn't check off all the usual check boxes. And to be fair, like, this record came out at such a time that Lester Bangs was still alive. So there was a crazy Lester Bangs opus on this.
Do you have that dialed up?
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah. We could spend days on it, but I do want to hear more about that. Yeah, we'll do it on the other side.
Shane, what do you want to dial up next?
Do you want to listen to Ballerina?
Yeah. Yeah, I genuinely like that song. So.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. There's nothing on this album that I think is like shitty.
No, it's not patently bad. It's not like New Kids on the Block or some shit. It's just fucking disorganized and boring.
Yeah, it's more boring than anything else. Yeah.
It's not fastidious.
You know what it kind of reminded me of, real quick before we listen? Mood-wise, it could be a good, like,
you know,
rainy day record.
That's exactly. A rainy day, hanging out with your lady, cuddling.
But it gave me the same feel as Nick Drake does, except Nick Drake is... Yes, cuddling.
With your lady on a rainy day.
Ryan's describing that, and he's aggressively pointing at Shane while he's talking about cuddling.
No, the power went out, so you can't watch anything on your Roku, but your phone still works. So you throw this on. And cuddle with your lady while it's
raining. All you need is mono for this stuff.
It's a very specific set of circumstances.
Yes.
And that's about the only time I would ever listen to this again.
Yeah, that's about right. It gives me the same mood feel, except, like, as any of the Nick Drake records, except those are so much better. The songs are so much. But I just thought about that. I was like, what does this make me feel like? Because I don't. The overall mood, I like the overall mood. It's just the individual songs. There's just not a lot to them. I don't know. Let's listen to that song.
All right, grab your lady. We're gonna listen to Ballerina.
Go cuddle.
The guy can sing.
Yeah.
He's got a fantastic voice. I'm not that crazy about the scat style where he's just kind of like, you know, just kind of like more
sliding a little bit.
It's like beat poetry, like over the songs. But he can sing for sure.
I think some of those lyrics are pretty evocative, not just in that song, but in this album in general. That's one thing we hadn't really talked. I mean, like, some of them can be really evocative, and it feels like maybe that's what he was putting all his effort into.
Is typically evocative of something. Like,
but I mean, they seem like little like some of them seem like vignette. Like if Madame
that's
George,
the,
like
I knew that's the word you were gonna get. Yeah. Vignette.
They are.
He sets a scene.
Guys.
Yeah, you
set the scene. But I think that's where he spent his time, was mostly working on the lyrics and melodies, and stuff came secondary. That's what it seems like to me.
Well, and it sounds like just based on some of the conversations with people who were in the room and part of those sessions or people who helped put those together, that the general, like the general condition of that room was he was in a booth by himself. The rest of the musicians were separate and were they were, you know, like a lot of them didn't even necessarily pay attention to what the lyrical content was. They're like, you listen because you have to be like pay attention to the overall thing. But they're, you know, they were playing this type of music, but with the sensibility of jazz guys. And so, you know, for that reason, I can certainly see why.
Well, and apparently it was inspired by Janet Planet. So there's that.
Sure.
But particularly what I like about that song more than the rest of this record is that it feels like it's going somewhere. And I think it's the strings that really do it. Like, you know, they just kind of like gradually progress like a little bit higher in pitch or higher in key. And that, you know, it's still probably
I like
not something I'm going to listen to every day, but go ahead.
No, I like that you said going somewhere because, like, I think a lot of what our criticism is about this is that we're looking for pop songs and that's not what he was trying to make at the time. But I like jazz.
It's a jazz record.
But I
dude.
Like. But here's the deal. No, it's not the. It's still real. It's rambly, and a lot of the jazz that I like to listen to, there's ultimately a point that they, you know, there's still a progression within the song. And here, there's not a lot. It's just it's like a babbling brook that's just, you know, going.
No, it's
for
people who like.
45
I'm sure
minutes.
They liked playing with each other, but they didn't know each other that well, and the shit doesn't go anywhere. And to me, that is boring.
The song's going anywhere.
And that's a lot of the,
right.
A lot of the reasons I'm not into most jazz are a lot of the reasons that I'm not into this record.
I find it interesting that you picked this as kind of one of your standout songs because this song has quite amount of dissonance to it and that it's a little off key.
Maybe that is what I like about it more because I tend to, you know, like I love me some Pixies.
True.
Watched a documentary on them last night. I like stuff
yes,
that
the Pixies
that
and Van Morrison. You're right. This is a Pixie sounding song. Like now that I think about it, like
are you being ironic?
I see so many parallels between
yeah,
the two.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm just. I can't
my point
just
is.
My
point
eyes.
Is. I like it when stuff goes a little askew. And this
you like it in your own way. You don't like dissonance or off.
Yeah, I seem to recall you saying in past podcasts where like the dissonance really kind of irks you. Like
when things don't sound in tune and there's a little bit of out of tune in his guitar in the song.
It depends, man. I can't necessarily qualify it, but when something hits me, it hits me and you know, this one hit me more than the rest of the record.
All right. Well, on that note, let's do some intermission stuff.
I wanted to pick something that would be a natural segue from Astro Week. So, of course, I chose the single off of the Kids soundtrack from 1995 by the Folk Implosion, Natural One. Let us
more folk music.
Yes, exactly. Still more folk. Like I've always gotten a kick out of that song, and for years it pissed me off to no end because you literally can't buy it without buying the entire Kids record soundtrack, and I was like, that's just a like it just always stuck in my craw. Like, it's a really, it feels like a really short-sighted licensing deal by in this case, the Folk Implosion, which is really a side project of Lou Barlow
from Sebado and formerly Dinosaur Jr.
Centrado.
Yes. And so, anyway, but what I didn't know until I really started digging into this was that that he curated that entire soundtrack, and that soundtrack is full of stuff that are Folk Implosion songs. This just happened to be the single off of it. So it makes a little bit more sense given that context. But then I found another piece where I guess Harmony, I don't know if it's Corinne or Corinne, the screenwriter who wrote Kids, was really into Centrado and some of the early stuff that Barlow had been doing. Anyway, and he used to just send him things, like, all the time. And they were like, this kid was, like, kind of intense and whatever. And so, anyway, he sent them the script for Kids. And then eventually it turned into this big deal. And he was like, I want you to come out. And so, whereas I think usually the way that these things tend to work, my guess is that anybody who is helping to curate the soundtrack or write stuff for a soundtrack just gets brought in after the movie's already been put together. But in this case, he was like, you know, he's like, I was there for casting, which is fascinating.
That's interesting.
That's crazy. Yeah. This song was like kind of a big hit.
It was
like
a hit. For him.
And yeah. Sebado was always one of those bands that was kind of like simmering like in the underground, but did well enough that like they didn't have to work day jobs or anything.
Yeah, they did just fine.
Yeah.
But I remember listening to this interview like during South by one year on the radio, and they were like, oh, so you've had this big hit with Natural One. Like, has that opened a lot of doors? Like, you know, you had a lot of opportunities because of that? And he was like, no, the opposite. Like, this, they ask us to do stuff that I would never want to do in my life. Yeah, like, you know, it's...
So he was just approached. He was just approached badly.
Well, he was approached with things that he didn't want to do. And, you know, the kind of stuff that he wanted to do with that project, he wasn't able to because they were seen as just this, like, little, you know, one-off, like, top 40 band or whatever. They do have one song, I like Folk Implosion more than I do Sebado, frankly. And they have one song that I got off a CMJ disc. Called Free to Go, which is amazing.
Oh yeah, that's a good song. I've heard that one before. I saw them live. It was all right.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good project, and this song is good. But it was just weird. He just cast into this box that he didn't want to be in. But decent tune. Creepy fucking movie though.
I never saw Kids. But I will.
Have you not seen it?
I've never seen it.
When you have kids, put them away. If you're going to watch that movie, is all I'm going to say.
It did launch some careers. It's also it's a very 90s phenomenon, like something that happened in the 90s where like indie movies could make money and become like cultural phenomenons in a way that like everything's so split up now. You don't really have that happen as much anymore.
Well, there is. We won't go down the rabbit hole too deep on this, but there is a movement afoot like. Amazon and Netflix are throwing a lot of money at independent filmmakers to try and do more of that type of stuff. Now, I don't know whether that means that...
Well, I think it was Larry Clark that was the director of that, and like he also did Bully after that. And they're both like bordering on like pedophile kind of stuff. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're well-made films and art and completely intriguing. I'm just telling you, like, you're going to want to take a shower afterwards.
Yeah. I've heard as much.
Yeah. Anyway, the other reason that I picked this track was that John Davis, who's the other half of the Folk Implosion, has got a record coming out. So for whatever that's worth, that guy, like, completely left the business. And
caught the bug again.
Apparently he
hadn't completely left it.
Well, right. He still knew where the business was. He just wasn't actively seeking the business for a while.
That happens. You see people do that.
Yeah.
All right, kids, you want to get back to it?
Let's do it. So I mentioned before the intermission that this record, we're talking about Van Morrison's Astral Weeks. that this record came out early enough that Lester Bangs was still alive, and he wrote a, you know, as he was wont to do, massive impassioned opus about.
Can I just mention something real quick? And yeah. I definitely want you to finish your thought.
Sure.
I just watched Almost Famous like right before I got to the show today.
Yeah.
So Lester Bangs is on the mind already.
Oh, sure.
Was it Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dearly departed.
Anyway, yeah. Which now seems like really apt casting, but whatever. So, a lot of times when, if you ever read old Lester Bangs piece, any of the Lester Bangs pieces, I guess they're all old. They typically are, they're as much about him as they are about the music, itself. And so I won't go into the whole thing, but I'll just share.
He was an eccentric dude.
Yeah, he was. And, but he said, he was talking about this, he was talking about Astral Weeks, and he said, in the condition I was in, it was assumed, this record assumed the quality of a beacon, a light on the far shores of the murk. What's more, it was proof that there was something left to express artistically besides nihilism and destruction. It sounded like the man who made Astral Weeks was in terrible pain most of Van Morrison's previous works had only suggested, but like the later albums by the Velvet Underground, there was a redemptive element in the blackness, ultimate compassion for the suffering of others, and a swath of pure beauty and mystical awe that cut through the heart of the work. Now, that seems to be a departure from what you guys are suggesting. But let me add one more little nugget and then I'll throw it to you, Shane. So, he goes on to say, it did come up about at a time when a lot of things that a lot of people cared about passionately were beginning to disintegrate. We're talking 1968. And when the self-destructive undertow that always accompanied the great 60s party had an awful lot of ankles firmly in its maw and was pulling straight down. So as timely as it is, perhaps Astral Weeks is also a product of an era.
That guy sure did like to write.
He did, yeah. But anyway, yeah, there's no mistaking a Lester Bangs piece. You just strap in.
I almost was thinking, like, I'm going to come in, like, I'm not going to have much to say about this because, like, I'm just, it makes me tired. That is a different take than what he said.
It is a product of its time. I definitely would. That's one of the things that I was thinking. I was like, this is some hippie-ass shit, man. I mean, it's not.
It's real hippie. It's real. To me, it's jazz hippie.
I don't get the jazz of it, other than the fact that the guy that's playing.
It's a bunch of musicians, like, improvising together. Then they're jazz musicians.
Yeah, but it doesn't. You don't listen. Like, I listen to a lot of jazz, and I don't hear the jazz stuff in there. It's jazzy. And there's a big difference. We've talked about this on the show before between jazz and jazzy. This is jazzy. But it's also like, you know, it's jazzy folk stuff. And it's folk that's not that good.
I just know that I could see like a bunch of like the Deadhead little fucking hippie dance.
That's not fucking jazz,
though. Where they look like a T-Rex or something. No. But if you took the Grateful Dead and he married it with like the most boring jazz on the planet. Here you go.
They look like a T-Rex. It's my favorite.
They do kind of look like.
Well, no, they do. They have their hands.
And
like
then they,
right
and then
out
they swoop their. But then they do that kind of thing where it looks like they have an invisible ball and they're.
By the way, T-Rex the band
is
great.
Interpretive dance here at the table. So yeah, let me. I'm going to add one more little nugget from Good Mr. Bangs, and this is kind of interesting because I think it informs what his take and the take of some other folks who have reviewed this album. Favorably have had to say, he says, Van Morrison is interested, obsessed with how much musical or verbal information he can compress into a small space, and almost conversely, how far he can spread out one note, word, sound, or picture to capture one note, be it a caress or a twitch. He repeats certain phrases to extremes that from anybody else would seem ridiculous because he's waiting for a vision to unfold, trying as unobtrusively as possible to nudge it along. Sometimes he gives it to you through silence by choking off the song in mid-flight. It's too late to stop now, quote, end quote. So, I don't, you know, obviously that's not how you guys feel about this record, but I do think that, like, that kind of informs his perspective, which is to say that, like, he was looking for something greater than the sum of his parts.
Yeah, that is some flowery prose right there.
He had a pen.
Good.
Dude could write.
Well, you know, it's funny that it's too late to stop now. I mean, that's my favorite song off of the next record, Into the Mystic. I mean, once you get into that, but that's a more, I guess, probably uplifting record anyway. God knows.
I thought the next record was
Moondance.
Moondance.
But Into the Mystic is on that record.
You know, one of the things that you guys brought up Shane, you specifically brought up before the break was Madame George. Lyrically, I thought that that was one track that I thought in particular, like, even if you don't like the record as a whole, like, it's hard to get past, like, the scene he paints, I think, is pretty
good. Right, that's one of the, I think that was the one where I finally really went back and started listening to the rest of the songs, just listening to the lyrics, because, again, like, not to, you know, whatever, the vignette or whatever, like, he paints, it's very evocative, and it's very, I don't know, the lyrics are great on that song. But it's also, like, really long, and just does the same thing over and over and over again. And without a lot of melody. But the lyrics are really good. Lyrics are good on this record in general. You know? I don't know.
I'm just not fond of the delivery method.
I don't think anybody is, Ryan. I think we determined that at the beginning of the album. But of this show. We're saying something that's, you know, we hadn't really talked that much about the lyrics, like, up till now. But let's listen to one more of these songs.
What you got for us?
You know, we could do that, Madam. We could do Madame George. I like the title track, the end of the title. I like the last half of that song, but let's do Madame George.
Down Cypress Avenue, with a childlike vision sleeping into view. The clicking, clacking of the high-heeled shoe. Ford and Fitzroy, Madame George. Marching with the soldier boy behind. He's much older now with head on drinking wine. And that smell of sweet perfume comes drifting through. Or the cool night, or like Shalimar. Yeah, that's sad, the making all the stops.
Yeah, that's another one. They're not really. What's it like? Almost only counts and. Horseshoes and hand grenades. Yeah, that's kind of like how you can
He's
describe
not doing
like.
Anything
No. I'm talking about the way that the instruments are tuned. Like they're not really like, you know, we're just gonna go with it here. We're just gonna fly by the seat of our pants. They're not really spending that much time making sure their instruments are tuned.
Let me ask you guys this. So one thing that I thought was particularly fascinating about the intervening years since this record was made was that he didn't play it publicly, certainly not as a contiguous unit until like a show or two shows that he did at the Hollywood Bowl in 2009. So it was like, it was kind of like one of the pieces I read said that Morrison's occasional disregard. So these guys are kind of viewing this as him giving this record the short shrift they think that it helped fuel his cult, suggesting that he tapped into a vein that frightened even him. This is a common thread among cult albums where audiences choose to live eternally within a few dark moments of an artist's life. See also Big Star's Third or Weezer's Pinkerton. I don't know.
I can get behind that, actually.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for like an audience finding an album rather than it being pushed on them.
Yeah.
That makes it more legendary.
But also
to me, like when you said the Hollywood Bowl thing, like I was just like, was that like a Jim Jones kind of situation where everybody's just passed out by the end of it?
Are you saying that they all drank Kool-Aid or what?
Well, I mean, except for they actually just went to sleep, because that's all I get from this. That song in particular.
I think that song's got crazy good lyrics.
Yeah,
I
it's got crazy good lyrics, and I think that you know, the idea of this sort of aging transvestite and like the way that it sounds to me, and Mark, I'd be curious to get your take on this. Like, it sounds to me like many of these are painted as like characters from Belfast.
Definitely, and there's a lot of geographical references to Belfast in here as well.
We've covered a lot of what this the legend of this record has come to be about. And I totally get that, like, there's really not, it's not succinct. It is meandering. But I think it's interesting, and I, you know, I got, I, I did not know it particularly well before we started down this road.
I didn't know it at all. I will say, I'm gonna walk away without really, you know, I don't care if I ever really listen to it ever again. But if I hear some songs that come on the radio, I'm gonna pay more attention to the lyrics in them now. Like,
hey, man, yeah, and I want to go. Like, you guys made the lyrics sound great, but you know how I am about lyrics. Like, I don't notice unless I like the song.
That's true.
I'm just gonna start listening to it in parking lots with a faraway gaze in my eyes.
Dude, that kid looks like really excited.
Oh, wait. Was he a kid?
Van Morrison, dude?
I had it in my mind like it was some like 55, 60-year-old man.
Oh, no, he was like 17 or something and like stacking carts. And he's like, what was that? And I was like, it's Van Morrison. And then I just went in and did my shopping.
Yeah, he's just, changed. He's just now getting into weed and the Grateful Dead. You know, he's like 16.
That guy's like shopping for hacky
sacks. I don't know that he
online.
Knew who Van Morrison was. I just didn't have time to sit and have a discussion about it and explain that I'm not really that into it, but I'm glad that you are because, hey, you know, well, I won't say Van Morrison.
That's discovering one of
those,
stuff.
Yeah. That is one of those crossroads where you don't realize it, but you cast that guy down a completely different path that night.
Could be. Like, who knows, man? Maybe, like, I had a very important role in this kid's life for about 10 seconds, and, like, he's in a new direction now.
He went home and started listening to Van Morrison. All right. That was Astral Weeks. Ryan,
I've got the new. I'm kind of violating my own rule a little bit on this one, but there's a good reason.
You have rules?
Well, I have a rule about, like, the new stuff. We were talking for a little while about maybe having local bands that we'd cover, and I typically don't like to do that. Because sometimes I run into these people and I want to be very honest, but I was listening to KUTX, a couple weeks ago and this really good song, came on and it happened to be by some people that I know and it's a band called Sweet Spirit and the song is called, The Power.
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
And practice your fashion. You're the kind of girl who followed the rules, but couldn't get any action. I'm the girl who laughed at teacher, partied under the bleacher and drank. At graduation, my name got mentioned. The room reacted like there'd been a mistake. Well, I stood up and I commenced. Speech. I stood up in my robes of silk, and I looked over the heads of the crowd, and I told them, I said, I got the answer here inside of myself. I got the power here inside of myself. I got the power here inside of myself. Come feel the power.
So like I said, I typically don't want to cover local bands because I'm going to run into these people, but that one I genuinely was just like listening to the radio and I was like, oh, who's this? And I'm like, oh, I know a couple of them. I know Sabrina, who's the singer, and I know Andrew, who's the guitar player. They're both also in another pretty great band called A Giant Dog, which is on Merge Records. So I don't know when those guys sleep, but they've got two buzzy bands going right now.
Well, and if I remember correctly, like, weren't they the band that Spoon opened for when they did the pop-up show, to, not this record, but the last record?
They're closely connected to Spoon. Yeah. Britt loves both of their bands.
Yeah.
But A Giant Dog is the one that's kind of like higher profile right now. But like this one would be any local musician's like dream to get as far as Sweet Spirit has. And A Giant Dog is like kind of like bubbling up right now, having landed on Merge, thanks largely to Britt Daniel. And so, you know, just good song. There's not a video. There is live video of it, if you guys want to look it up. But anyway, cool people. Like, I like everybody that I've met associated with them. I booked a couple shows with her old band, Bobby Jealousy. And, you know, I've had nothing but good things to say about her and her music. Forever. Shane, what did you think?
Oh, totally not my thing at all. I do like some other songs they have on the album that came out before this quite a bit. This is a little too like 80s classic rock kind of like rock and roll stuff I don't really care for. But she's a great singer. And
oh, she's got pipes, man.
Yeah.
And live, like, she's a little theatrical. It might be a little meatloafy for some people. But, like, Andrew is just slays on guitar, and he used to play.
This is why we don't do bands that are from Austin, by the way. You're just talking over more, just again and again and again just about these people as people.
No, I was going to talk about, like, his guitar work. He used to be in the OBN 3s, and, like, live, like, he just has, like, a really signature sound, and he improves any project he's in.
Anyway, yeah, I think the other thing that occurs to me about this act is that this is this band is one of our buddy Chad, the music journalist,
Chad Twiatecki.
Yeah, one of his favorite acts, and I'm kind of I probably sit in the same boat as Chad, or not as Chad, as Shane on this. Like, there's some tracks off the previous record that I really like, and I like this song. Like, I could see how live they'd probably be a lot of fun. I haven't caught them live
actually,
yet.
Actually, live, I liked them less than when I heard this. But they've only been a band for maybe 2.5 years or something. And I wasn't that crazy about it. They opened for Spoon when Spoon did that little pop-up show. And I wasn't that crazy about them then. But I genuinely like this song. And yes, I generally avoid talking about local bands.
Anyway, then thanks for sharing it. It'll be good to see, or interesting to see what they come up with on the rest of this next release. Who has the next one? Shane, is that you?
No, this was me. I think it's Ryan.
Oh, it's Brad.
You know what? I've heard about this band for forever. I've never listened. I don't even think I know a Yardbird song. I think maybe I've heard one.
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I just know a bunch of them went on to
do
other shit
and
that they
become
were
a lot
famous,
more successful.
And yeah,
but it's number 350 on Rolling Stone's best 500 records of all time.
Well, we've already established even in this show how arbitrary,
of course,
lists
is.
Like that is.
All art is arbitrary. All appreciation of art is arbitrary. But it's the Yardbirds, Roger the Engineer, apparently also known as Over Under Sideways Down.
Okay, doke. None of that sounds familiar to me. So I'm definitely not the person that likes this one. Oh, yet I like some stuff from the '60s.
Hey, man, they were precursor to Led Zeppelin.
Lots of good bands.
And,
yeah,
and yeah. So let's get into that next week.
All right, sounds good.
In the meantime, I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
And I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It. Oh, and if you heard the podcast and you have an opinion on it one way or the other. We don't typically raise our hand and say, hey, it'd be cool if you reviewed us, but we don't have very many of those yet, and we'd love to get some. We'd love to hear what you think.
On iTunes.
iTunes.
So if you're listening to us right now on iTunes, click whatever little buttons there that it asks you to click to write a little short review.
Tell us what you think. All right.